One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice.
Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscience, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. I am Michael Eric Owen.
And I am DT, and we're back in the studio once again.
Back in the studio, man.
Is this 50 yet? Are we on 50 yet?
Nah, we're getting close. Okay. We're getting close.
Coming up.
Yeah, matter of fact, July 22nd. Was our 1 year anniversary, brother. I mean, we had an anniversary, man.
I mean, wow, 1 year later, man, and we're still.
I heard Tony Tone come up into my, it's our anniversary.
And then, you know, thinking back, did you see One Mic, One Voice?
Do you? No, go ahead, bro.
Did you see yourself doing that on One Mic, One Voice?
Oh, no, nah, man. Okay. This is our anniversary, man. I should have brought you some, bro. I know you got a surprise, though, because that's how you roll.
I already negotiated with Richard. We got something planned.
Oh, we got some plan, huh? Something, hey, you going to step up the special mix or something?
Yeah, me and Richard always got a little agenda.
Hey, but congratulations, brother. Congratulations, yeah, man, same. On a year of putting in the work.
Yeah, man, it's been rewarding. It's been challenging. It's been exciting,
man. The dialogue,
we've had some very dynamic guests on the show in that time frame. Yeah. It's just been a ride, yeah, to say the least. Yeah.
And the dialogue that we've had over the course of this last year has been enlightening at times. It's been robust. It's been, and sometimes grotesque. And sometimes it's just been quite irritating. For the most part, it's been great. I mean, we've heard from a lot of people all over the world, and I never imagined, that we would be having the impact that we're having. Always in the vision, right? So I'm saying it's not out of the realm of my thoughts, but clearly, I feel real good about where we are at. One mic, one voice. What we've been doing, we got a theme song.
Oh, man.
We in a new studio.
Hot fire.
We in a new studio. Black and Studio is doing,
man, so many things
great
have
things.
Come into fruition.
Yeah,
since then, over
the last year, man. Just seeing, hard work, putting in the hard work, folks. And I want to say thank you to the continent of Africa. Thank you to the United Kingdom. You know, just thank you to Eastern Europe. I mean, just thank you to the United States. Thank you to all the states that are following us and listening in. We appreciate your support, and we just look forward to continuing to talk and to make our world a better place.
I'm hoping that the subject matter at some point can get lighter. But we may be on episode 1,000 before that happens.
But you know, man, and I was thinking about this as I was driving to the studio this morning, and I was just thinking about, the conversation is deep. You know, the conversation is challenging, and not everybody want to put on that podcast. And every time it's just so deep, and it's so, and in some regards, it's painful. In some regards, it's a reminder of the ills of America. But, folks, we can't run from it.
Yeah.
Where would we go? Let me just say that. Where would we go? Because no matter where we go, we're facing this. And if you're fortunate enough not to be facing this, then maybe you are concerned about this. Because we are our brother's keepers. And so some people, as some people are meant to be the watchman on the tower. Some people are meant to look out and say, you know what? They're coming. Danger is happening. This is what's going on. You need to prepare yourself. That's what One Mic and One Voice is all about. Bringing out where we are at today and tying it to where we have been. And hopefully what we're dealing with today, DT, can just awaken the minds and the hearts of the people that are listening to us. This is not about demonizing a race. Man, I hear from our white brothers and sisters, man. They, you know, some of them, and we're going to have Jamie Pettis on the show today to talk about how can our white brothers and sisters get more involved in social activism. Looking forward to that conversation. But some of them feel guilty. Mm-hmm. Some of them feel like we don't want them in this struggle because of sometimes of the rhetoric that comes out or the passion that comes out. But let me say this to my white brothers and sisters. We appreciate you. We, matter of fact, as I told Jamie, you are in the tradition that has always been. White people have all, NAACP was founded by black and white people, okay? When you look at the abolition movement, when you look at the Great Awakening movement, it was white people. So this is the struggle. The struggle is trying to encourage white folks while trying to encourage ourselves. That's the struggle. Because a white person can go home and still be white and put this thing away. A black person can never put this thing away. So maybe I'm guilty of not acknowledging the contributions of white folks. We had Dr. Gelada on here. I don't think anybody that heard that show would think that I would not be grateful and appreciative of all that she has done in my life and for my life. She is a mentor of mine. But what I want to say today is, folks, we all got to toughen up. Mm-hmm. We all got to get, it's not about you, it's not about me, it's about us as a collective. Mm-hmm. And if you are offended, if I'm offended, we got to get the hell over it.
Mm-hmm. Or at least be able to sit down and have a discussion, right?
We got to get over it, brother. Because what I'm going to say is our time right now is crucial. Black men are dying. The white man that was tased by cops, he's brain dead now. The white kid that was shot by cops is dead now. The body cam shows that he was killed. We need to wake up and understand this problem is affecting all of us, but disproportionately it's affecting black men. That's why we say black lives do matter. So, brother,
no more time for playing, huh?
We you know, this is serious, man. And you know, I like to have fun. Don't get me wrong, but we're in serious times right now, and in serious times, it calls for those of us who have the ability to stand up and fight and stay in the fight, regardless of your race, creed, sexual orientation. This is about us all. Mm-hmm. And I can see the Edis Prettis Bridge with King and the others marching across that bridge, linked hand in hand, black, white, Jews, all of them, Hispanics, walking hand in hand, symbolically representing of the true America and the freedom that we all should want for each other. I don't know, bro.
I have like 1,000 thoughts in my head right now. Just yesterday, I was in a grocery store, and I had picked up my items. I was getting ready to check out. I had just a few things, probably like 3 or 5 things, and there was a lady in front of me who had a bunch of stuff, you know, like 1,000 items. Mm-hmm. And then so she looks, a white lady, she looks back at me and he looks at my hand, looks at the things that I have. And then she kind of thinks about it for a second, like, maybe I should let him go in front of me, maybe not. And then she turns back around, you know, that was the end of it. And so just before, you know, it's her time to put her stuff up, that she says, you know what, she tells the cashier, not me directly, she said, I'm going to go ahead and let him put his things before mine. Never looked at me after that, though. Mm. And I was thinking to myself, you know, I would like to at least make eye contact with her, yeah, so I could thank her, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just like, man, the climate of this place is so rigid. And I'm thinking like, man, wow, really?
Yeah.
But, you know, long story short, I picked up my stuff. I put it up on the thing. I did turn to her and say thank you, even though she wasn't looking at me, and went on about my day. But that was just a really interesting little encounter I had yesterday, man. It was just like those little moments of division also affect our lives.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Absolutely. We are struggling with how to approach one another, mm-hmm, engage in conversation with one another. Nobody wants... Well, I can say to me, as a black man, I don't want sympathy. Mm-hmm. I want empathy, okay? I don't need you feeling sorry for me. I need you to empathize with me and our history and this country and what we're going through. Sympathy is off the table in my book. We need to know the difference between the two. But, brother, let's do this. We're gonna take a break right quick. Rich is telling me over here, he's going to take my special mix from me if I don't take a break. So we're going to go ahead and take a break, and we will be right back.
My name is Kareem Muhammad, Executive Director of Teachers Appreciation Foundation. When I listen to podcasts, radio, I'm always tuned in to One Mic, One Voice. Thank you.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. You know, next week, DT, on Sunday, July 31st, we're going to be broadcasting live.
Going live
for the gala fundraiser for the Teacher Appreciation Foundation. Executive Director Kareem Muhammad is going to be at Galardia Country Club, which is 5300 Galardia Boulevard in Oklahoma City. And Carmen Coffey, a media personality, will be the MC of that event. Folks, if you ain't got your tickets yet, admissions is $75, couples $125, or you can get a table of eight for $400. Go to TAF5, that is TAF, the number 5.org, to get your tickets and come out and see us, man. You know, look us in the face.
Yeah, it's going to be beautiful.
We're going to have a lot of fun, so we're looking forward to doing that. The other thing I will say is transitioning, because this is not a juxtaposition. they not join together, but the Republican National Convention.
Oh, how exciting, how fun, how entertaining.
Did you have a chance to tune
in? You know what, I caught the last part of it, maybe like the last 20 mm-hmm. minutes or so, man. I mean, I really just couldn't believe my eyes for once. Mm. I mean, it's like, what am I watching, first of all? Mm-hmm. You know, and then hearing Trump out of his own mouth say, you know, there are people who thought that I wouldn't make it to this position. And I mean, even talking back on some of our old podcasts, I think none of us were expecting this. Right. I mean, so not only was he shocked,
yeah,
but so are we.
Right.
But, you know, I did pick up on a few of the things that he was saying, and I didn't think it to be appropriate. Mm. And then, you know, he's talking about making America safe again, and I'm like, okay, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. For who, where? It was like watching a cartoon. Mm. Like, not like I was watching something serious at all, just like some mm-hmm. Entertaining television.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get a chance because I was actually in Austin for a conference, but I heard some commentary about his speech. I did get a chance to look at a little bit. You know, one thing that struck me was just the the darkness and how, and don't get me wrong, I acknowledge that America has issues.
But I would also acknowledge that there's some great things happening in this country. The very fact that we can sit here and talk about America's issues is a great thing, right? That we have the freedom to do that is a lovely thing. So I don't think you move the country forward by demonizing the country itself. That's my challenge to the way Trump sees America. You know, he says the military is a disaster. I mean, that's his direct quote from him. You know, that
we aren't strong arming people enough or what?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the military is not a disaster. The military is ran the way it's always been run. You say our veterans are great. I mean, I understand why, though. I understand because if, you know, his base, let's just be honest, his base, and we can talk about the Democratic base, too. So I don't want to be one sided, but his base is steeped in fear. And his slogan was make America great again. I mean, it's his base is one that quote unquote America was great at some period in time and it's not great anymore. I don't know if you saw that Facebook thing where they were asking people about
why are they voting for Trump?
What was America great again? Did you see that? Maybe interesting for us to pull that up. And you know, the conclusion was that America really has never been great. I mean, if you said America was great during, you know, when it was founded, well, what about that thing called slavery? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Oh, man. Well, America was great then in the 40s and the 50s. Oh, okay. Well, what about that thing called, well, let's go back. Okay. America was great as it's founded. What about that thing called genocide on Native people and the scripting of their culture and so forth? Yeah, I guess that was not too good. So what about then the, you know, 40s and 50s and 60s? Well, okay, then what about Jim Crow? And America wasn't really that great then. So I mean, any period you pull out, you say the 60s, what about all the counter movements, the New Left movement, the Civil Rights movement, you can look at the gay and lesbian movement, you can look at the anti-Vietnam movement. I mean, you know the Black Power movement. I mean, when was America great?
I mean, really, like, what is the expectation, though? Because we're talking about America being great again, but what does that look like?
Yeah.
I mean, can you frame that?
It doesn't. You
can
can't.
You frame that for all people?
No.
Or can you just frame that for some people?
For some people. And that's my point. My point is that his base is a group of people that can departmentalize American history in a way that they feel America was at its best. Mm-hmm. Okay. And all those other things are truly irrelevant. Now, the Democratic base is a different base. It's a much more diverse group of people. I mean, anybody that watched the DNC this week, you're going to see more black people. It's more diverse. That's not an argument that people can make and say that they're all about the same level of diversity. It's just not. Okay. But their base is much more. We got that clip. Yeah, let's go ahead and folks, we just going to play this clip just to kind of make a point.
When was America last great?
For me, I would say the turning point for our country was 1913, when we passed the 17th Amendment.
And what's so like back when like women couldn't vote?
Yeah,
that's kind of your sweet spot right there.
Absolutely, but 1913.
What year was America great?
When it was founded.
Except for the slavery stuff.
You know?
I think we were probably our strongest immediately post-World War II.
So around the 1950s?
Yeah, mid-40s, 50s.
I mean, I think the 50s was great other than, you know, segregation and women's rights.
Look, we could sit here and paint negative faces of all times in America.
Correct.
It's make America great again. So when was the last great?
It's always been great.
If it's always been great, what are we trying to go back to?
We're not going back. We're going forward.
Well, I guess the 80s were pretty good.
Right, the 80s.
The 80s, great music, great
crack cocaine.
Games, crack cocaine?
Yeah.
Well, we're always great. The people are great.
So America is great right now. So we did it.
No, we didn't do it.
America became great when the founding fathers put pen on paper in 1776 and decided to build a country based on laws.
Right.
That was greatness.
That was awesome. Yeah. Other than the slavery, obviously, that was terrible. And
we did have that. Yeah, we did have that. And the Indian thing, right?
That was terrible. And the women's voting thing. But other than that, that was awesome.
A few hiccups along the way, you know. Like they say, nobody made it to the top without breaking a few pieces of china. That wasn't an insult, by the way.
Oh wow! And if you haven't seen it, the last interviewer was actually Asian, and so that's why he said, "Well, this is not an insult."
The guy's like
a few hiccups.
Yeah, just a few little mistakes along the way. Bumps in the road. I mean, nothing to get all worked up over. You know, I mean, it's just how it was, man. You know, we had to do that. I mean, it was essential, and hopefully to be overlooked somehow.
Okay, America. And I'm proud to be in this country. I'm proud to have served my country. But we have issues. And as DT, you pointed out, for some group in history, America was not great. For the Japanese, when the internment camps with them, the Native Americans, the Black people, Hispanic people, even when you talk about the Irish and the German, even when they came and the racism that they experienced, okay, for a group of people, there was a period where America was not so great. But that's his base, okay? And I think that's my concern, is that we feel like for some reason that we can overlook the atrocities that have happened in our country and not make restitution for those. Now, the Democrats have their chance. They have their chance to now come to the stage and say what they're going to do, to craft their vision. And we know their base is much more progressive, much more liberal. And we will look forward to giving some analysis on that.
What's funny in that video is that there are people who were able to give specific and direct answers to that question. Mm. If somebody had asked you that question, would you have been so specific? I mean, of course, you're a Black man, so your viewpoint is a lot different. And I don't think they asked.
There was no Black person
asking the Black people
for obvious reasons.
But it's just a kind of interesting to me that there were people.
They didn't ask any Native American people.
Yeah, 1776, the 1950s.
The 30s. The 1913. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, right there. Again, that's an interesting point that they didn't. Well, who makes up his base, though? I mean, it was Trump supporters they were asking anyway. Mm-hmm. So you would have found very few minorities involved in that anyway. Well, let's do this. We're going to take a break. And folks, we will be right back.
My name is Kareem Muhammad, Executive Director of Teachers Appreciation Foundation. Join us Sunday, July 31st, 2016 at the Galardia Country Club in Oklahoma City for the Gala Fundraiser. For tickets, log on to TAF5.org. That's TAF5.org. Or you can email us at TAFteam5, that's the number 5, at gmail.com. Or you can give us a call at 405-532-3488. See you guys there.
This is Josh K.
And I am Leah Marie.
And when we listen to podcasts, we always listen to
One Mic, One Voice.
You can change the world, it's your choice.
Your choice.
Wow. welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. So, man, it again, right? Another incident.
Here we go. Miami, Florida. Black therapist trying to assist one of his autistic patients who was run off, has a toy truck, waving it around. Somebody calls in and says, hey, some kid's out here with a gun. We need you to send somebody. Next thing you know, therapist is trying to assist his patient and ends up shot. Has his hands up, is pleading with the officer, look, man, this is not a have your gun out situation. I'm just trying to calm my man down. Pow, pow, pow. Ouch, ouch, ouch. I mean, man, really, I just really caught up on this story today, but I thought about myself because it said, you know, black therapists, and we have clients who are dealing and struggling with serious issues, and we deal in the community, so it's not like it will be uncommon for us to be out in a place where people can see you, and you know, see you doing a service. Mm-hmm. And make that indication. And I think to myself, you know, the person who's making that call has to be a lot more responsible for making those type of accusations. You just can't call the police station and say, hey, somebody's out here with a gun.
Yeah.
Because that heightens the situation for the police officer going into the situation, trying to decide, you know, what will be the best practice for him to do.
Yeah.
But my irresponsibility of saying there's a gun instead of a truck changes the whole situation itself. Maybe that man doesn't end up shot. But regardless, the guy has his hands up, is on the ground, and is of no threat at all to the police officer and gets shot anyway.
He is lucky to be alive. Mm-hmm.
Lived. That was another thing. Because if he didn't, that would have changed the whole dynamic of the story.
But he's lucky to be alive, though, because many of these encounters are deadly. And you watch the video, you see he's got his hands up. And they say this guy, I don't know if you've seen the one in Austin, and I'll go back to Austin. Or let me forget Austin. But you see this this guy with his hands up, and they say this police officer, he's a SWAT team member.
A specialist. Huh?
Specialist. But the explanation is he shot the wrong guy.
Oh, wow.
Well,
You know what? When the guy asked him, you know, why did you shoot me? Police says, I don't know.
Yeah, he said he don't know.
It's his natural instinct. Sorry.
I mean,
and it's not funny, man. But it's like, really, dude, are we at the point where it really don't matter what you say? Did you not even have to have a reason anymore? The police officer didn't even have an explanation for the guy. He didn't say, "Sir, you looked aggressive. You looked like you were reaching for something."
Let me tell you what I saw last night on TV.
I don't know.
A show called Southern Justice, where they follow police officers around. And this guy was a known fugitive, had stolen a car, white guy, had drove back into the backwoods. They finally located him, and he took off running. They chased him down, arrested him, and brought him to jail. But a black man gets pulled over for a broken taillight, acknowledges that I have a gun, I have a permit, I went through all everything, it's legally mine.
Pow.
Dead.
Pow, pow.
A known fugitive. This was in the dark. Mm-hmm. It was not during the day. At night. Now, okay. This brother, during the day, gets pulled over. Let's talk about during the day with Michael Brown. Let's talk about during the day with Eric Gardner. This is at night in the backwoods. Mm-hmm. This dude could have shot them at any moment, but they had fear dealing with this individual than they do a black man sitting in a car. Okay. he ends up dead. Or a black man selling cigarettes that's choked out. Or a black man that's selling CDs that's pinned to the ground. His hands are pinned. Even if he had a gun on him, he shot to death. Folks.
This black professional, now that we're talking about, he didn't die. Like you said, he's lucky to be alive.
Lucky to be alive.
Still, same situation.
It what we need to understand, and this is what I want our listeners to get, that it is easy, and I think police departments also view it like this. They view those incidences as separate. So in other words, what happened in Minnesota, that was a separate incident. What happened to Trayvon Martin, that was a separate incident. What happened, Michael Brown, that was separate. Philando Castile, separate. Those are all separate incidents, okay? Tamir Rice, separate incident, right? Let me tell you, through the eyes of people that have been treated a certain way and dehumanized, they're connected together. They're one narrative, and they are connected back to the origin of our country, slavery. Because in slavery, it was the fight to be human, mm-hmm. to be seen as a human being. When the Constitution said we were 3/5 of a person, it was a fight. The law said that you were not human. We forget that we were 3/5 of a person. Scientists studied blacks' brains, the size of their brains, and said that they were inferior. If you go through, go to JSTOR, go to Academic Elite, go to any, go. There are articles written during that time that justify slavery, justify the unintelligence of black people, the inhumanity of black people. Scholars wrote about that. The quest to be seen as a human being.
Did you know that there was a, back in the day, there was a mental diagnosis for slaves who ran away from their plantations?
Mm.
And that was justified as a mental illness.
Mm.
If you, for some reason, found yourself wanting to get away from master's grips.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah, you crazy.
Yeah.
Who want to leave master's house? Yeah. Who want to leave a plantation? You want to run away from that?
This is the societal structure in which these incidences are viewed. It's one narrative, folks. If you're saying, well, this happened over here, there's good cops, there's bad cops, it is seen as one narrative throughout history of the oppression and the abuse and the brutality against minority folk. Get this. The Justice Department just came out with new statistics. Okay. One in three black boys will end up spending some time in prison in their life. It used to be one in four. Now it's one in three.
Hmm.
One in six Hispanics. Okay. Prior to the war on drugs in the 70s, prior to Nixon's war on drugs, there were 300,000 people in prison. Today, there's 2.3 million people.
Mm.
We lead the nation. We are. Listen,
we're the freest, right?
We're the freest. We are 5% of the world's population, but 20% of the incarceration population in the world. We lock people up. We're good at locking people up.
Yeah, you're going to jail. We can definitely.
We're experts at locking people up.
They can guarantee that. Even that they spend the money to draw the statistic on how many people will be in jail is something even eye-opening.
We lock people up. Doesn't matter.
Walk across the street, locked up.
The challenge is, but get this. Okay. DT, let me ask you a question, man.
Okay.
Why is it so difficult for us to have these conversations?
I think willingness is one thing. I think for anybody to have a meaningful conversation has to be wholehearted on both sides. Both sides have to be open to listening with an open mind, with an open heart. And that's often difficult for people to do because they're carrying so many other factors that are kind of clouding their rationale. So I can't see your points because my viewpoint is so dense and so rooted in me that I can't, it's like I'm blind. I can't even open my eyes to your side of the story.
So if I come to you and I say, DT, man, I got a problem with you, man.
I have two choices. I can say, Mike, let's hear your problem. I want to hear what you have to say. Or I could be like, Mike, that's your problem. Okay. Okay.
Forget about it. It happened a long time ago, man. Let's just move forward, right? My whole thing is, until America can begin to dialogue and create space for healthy dialogue about these problems, they will never go away. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. Because people keep saying, well, no, that was a long time ago. And unless we dialogue and talk about, get this, America created a narrative of racial differences. They created white supremacy based upon the subjugation of a different race. That's what this country did. They created the narrative. It's connected. Okay, when you look at the fashion industry today, you look at beauty today, that's directly connected to the creation of a race that was supposed to be superior, white. Look at those in charge today, directly connected, okay, to white supremacy. Why can't we have that conversation? I didn't do it. Okay. even our white brothers and sisters that are here with us now, they didn't do it.
And I think that's some of the problem too, because a lot of them are carrying that blame based on others' viewpoints. So if I'm a black guy and I say, man, I don't like white people, you generalize because you're saying all white people, mm-hmm. in a sense, right? But yeah, that's not true, because white people, the white people here today didn't enslave our ancestors.
Yeah.
But it happened.
Yeah.
And like you're saying, the history is connected to them. So they're the person that we have here to blame. But that doesn't say that they're the reason why, mm-hmm. it's still a problem today.
Yeah. And I would even say that there is no one to blame but America.
Because I see whites get defensive. Mm-hmm. You know, when the conversation comes up, it's always like, well, you know, it wasn't me, but I also don't have anything to contribute to the helping part of it.
It seems like
at times you have to choose a side, mm-hmm. in a sense. Even like the encounter I had with the lady at the cash register, I didn't feel like, you know, there was really anything ill towards me. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, she doesn't know me personally. Yeah. But something, you know, about me being black and about her being white had her to choose, mm-hmm. how she would deal with that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to. That's interesting. You have to choose a side. I would make a distinction between white folks and America. America, okay, the system of America enslaved people, incarcerates people, a system of inequality is still in place. There are some that benefit from it and some that pay the price for it. Mm-hmm. Those that benefit from it, listen, have an obligation to assist those that pay the price for it. Why? Because you're getting unearned privilege. You didn't earn it. That's like me and you having the same job, and we work the same hours, But you get paid more money. You get allowed to live in a better neighborhood simply because the boss likes you. The boss owns the subdivision, so you live there. But Mike, no, you can't come in here. That is unearned privilege. And it is up to you to say, no, that's wrong. That's wrong. Me and Mike do the same job. He works just as hard as me. No, that's not the way we're going to live in this society. Okay, let me just point some things out for you. Since some of you folks might say I'm crazy when I'm talking about having these conversations. Okay. South Africa had an acknowledgement and a reconciliation. Okay, for apartheid. Okay. Rwanda, for the genocide that took there, had an acknowledgement and a reconciliation for that. Mm-hmm. Germany had an acknowledgement and reconciliation. Today, you can go in front of Jewish homes where monuments and markers are there to remember those that were taken. Okay. You can go through the concentration camps so that no one will ever forget. Germany has created a culture of acknowledgement and reconciliation and acceptance. Okay. We have no space in this country to talk about slavery, lynching, convict leasing, Jim Crow, segregation, mass incarceration, and now police brutality. Hmm. We have no space, not even to mention what happened to the Japanese, not even to mention what happened to the Native peoples. We have no space because America, get this, has always been in denial. Mm-hmm. That is the issue. If you want to say, what is our problem? Because even today, brother, I post an article, and this person goes into how her father came over here as an immigrant. This was about white privilege, how her father came over here as an immigrant, how he made his way and how he's respected by so many people. You know what? Hey, bravo. Okay. That's not what this is about. Mm-hmm. This is about unearned privilege. In other words, this is what she told me. I'm not having that conversation with you.
Yeah.
I won't have that conversation with you. My father, okay, and because I didn't acknowledge her father, she said, I disrespect him. I said, well, your father didn't come over as a slave.
You know her father?
I don't know him.
Oh.
But I should respect him, though. I don't even know him. But your father didn't come over.
Unearned privilege, huh?
Didn't come over as a slave. It wasn't laws against. See, this is what people don't understand. It wasn't laws on the books that said you could not learn to read and write. It was not laws on the books that said if you were caught reading, you would go to jail. We're having two different conversations. And what I'm trying to say is, why won't you have the conversation with me? I didn't blame her. I didn't blame her dad. Mm-hmm. I just posted an article.
Let's talk about it.
Some people responded, great article, you know, opened my eyes, yada, yada.
Did you write the article? You
know, I didn't even write the article. I'm not even the author of the article, man. Right? And I thought the article was really balanced. And I'm like, why? Why won't you have the conversation with me? Because we cannot move forward as a country, as a community. And let me tell you this. As black people, we need to understand history, man. White people are not our enemy. The enemy is the American system. That's the enemy. There are some crazy white people, just like there's some crazy black people, okay? I mean, period. Hatred on either side has got to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to go. I posted an article about two judges, one black, one white. This is in Wisconsin.
Mike, these articles are going to get you.
No, let me tell you something about this one, though. He needed a kidney. He's black. She's white. Okay. Their families know each other. They were a perfect match.
Hmm.
This woman gave him life again. Hmm. white woman, black man. He said, folks, they were a match. How can we sit here and say color makes us different? When you can cut that woman up and give me one of her vital organs because she's a match for me.
Still works for me, huh?
Okay. That's what I'm talking about. Unless we begin to acknowledge where we have been, we'll never understand where we're at right now.
Like you said, there'll be a lot of people quick to argue just based on skin alone that's enough reason to separate ourselves. But it's much deeper than that. Biologically, we're looking at a human body and saying, I'd be able to take something from you and use it for myself to be able to sustain myself. And that's powerful.
It is powerful. It is powerful. And we're going to take a break. But let me close out by saying how I want to say hypocritical all of this is. Okay. Alabama, folks, get this. Alabama, the state of Alabama, okay, has all these monuments of the Confederacy. Jefferson Davis' birthday is a state holiday. Okay. Confederate Memorial Day is a state holiday. Okay. Martin Luther King doesn't even have his own day. It's Martin Luther King Day / Robert E. Lee Day. Okay.
How?
So we can celebrate what the South did, but we can't even talk about what the South put black people through.
And how it's still, I mean, you know, the thing is, Mike, is like, it's still affecting us, man. We can't escape that. You asked earlier, if you're going to run, where are you going to go to hide from these problems and from these issues that we deal with every single day? And if I can't escape it, then I have to deal with it at some point. And why not now than this care? I mean, because, I mean, just as long as we've been alive, we've been facing the same issues.
And let me tell you what one person, one critic will say. The reason why is because you're preoccupied with race. You're a victim. You have a victim mentality. Folks, let me tell you something. I have tried to put race aside. I have tried to not think about race. But let me tell you something. Every time I'm that naive, I'm reminded of the skin that I'm in. Mm. It is the world that reminds me. Mm. It's the people that I work with that reminds me. It's the police officer that reminds me. It's the mass media that reminds me of the skin that I am and somehow is devalued in this society. No, it's not a victim mentality. It's actually I see through the eye gate what's happening. Mm. Each and every day.
Every day. And that inability to escape it, I mean, leaves us here at the table every week having these discussions about how to move the conversation forward.
We got to talk.
Because otherwise, man, we do ourselves a disservice. I mean, hiding from our truth, you know.
But let me tell you something. This is why I'm so excited about Jamie Pettis. She's coming on the show, folks. We're going to talk about how we can get involved in social activism, how our white brothers and sisters can get involved. There's a place for you. There's always been a place for you at the table, in the struggle, making our world better. We will be right back.
Hi, this is Tiffany Hill, host of Authentic Conversations, a weekly motivational podcast where we discuss matters such as self-worth, relationships, parenting, professional development, physical, emotional, and spiritual health. You can find me on Facebook at Authentic Conversations by Tiffany Hill, on social media at @th_authentic, and you can also subscribe to Authentic Conversations on iTunes and Podbean, and the show is also available on blackinstudios.com. I look forward to connecting with you, and remember, to live authentically is the ultimate form of happiness.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. Man, I am I'm excited, okay, because Jamie was on here before. And you were
and I'm excited because I miss Jamie. Yeah, she did a wonderful job in my absence. So I'm excited just to be able to talk.
Yeah,
to
DT
you.
DT took the day off. He can do that. He a superstar. He could do that.
Yeah, they were giving you crap for that.
I know. I heard it.
But Jamie Pettis, welcome back to the show. Jamie is of course has roots in Oklahoma, but is in Arizona. She's an entrepreneur. We had her picture and basically her contact information, which we will run again on One Mic, One Voice. And when Jamie was on before, the conversation came up about how can our white brothers and sisters get involved. And I said to Jamie at the time, I said, we have to have you come back on and talk a little bit about your observations when it comes to that. Because as you have said, there's so many that want to get involved, but just don't know how. And I want to thank you for agreeing to come back on. We appreciate you. And don't agree too much, because see, we'll be calling on you right and left.
Okay, that's fine. I'm glad to do it.
So talk a little bit about some of your observations.
Well, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago in your show. Not everybody has to be involved in the same way. One thing, I'm going to start here. One thing that people can do that can go a long way and be very powerful and seen change before my very eyes by doing this is simply by speaking up, you know, rhetoric and stuff like that. If you hear something, you know, racial or prejudice or whatever, say something. You don't have to go on the attack. It create awareness, essentially. People are often scared to do that, because, you know, fear of being wrong or judged. But we have to do that. It's our responsibility to do that. It, in and of itself, you know, plants a seed and creates change. There's also certain things, and we touched on this last time we talked, that I was thinking about, and I was talking to a family member and a girlfriend. Saying things like all lives matter doesn't help anything. There's a defense coming from, like, I guess, the quote-unquote the other side, certain people, either they don't understand what, for example, Black Lives Matter means, or they don't want to understand, whatever the case may be, saying things like all lives matter, blankets a purpose of an organization such as Black Lives Matter. It also shows that there's a lack of understanding of what the purpose of Black Lives Matter is, which is all in all essence about equality. So to say things like that, you know, does not help. Another thing, I know you want things to do, but I'm going to say a couple of things not to do.
Okay.
I see there's posts like on Facebook, for example, that will say, love is the answer. Love is the answer. Well, we know love is the answer, but that won't bring people back to life. As my girlfriend cousin said, it won't bring people back from the dead. They said saying all the kumbaya stuff won't bring people back from the dead. So even though in the bigger picture love is the answer, there has to be a more specific action towards movements, for example, Black Lives Matter, because people are losing their lives. So more specific action has to be taken. More conversations have to be had. And you mentioned something about people being uncomfortable about talking about it. Well, it will be uncomfortable. But we have to talk about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm another thing I want to say is no one, to the white population, no one's trying to make you, at least I'm not, I don't think DT or Michael is, no one's trying to make anybody feel bad for being white.
Exactly.
Well, we got to talk about this, because as you see in the signs and posters and marches and stuff, white silence is violence. We have to speak up. We have to be uncomfortable and talk about it. So there are other things. Make it personal. But, okay, because you're white. Make this personal. Whether you have a family member who's a person of color, or simply think about any time that you've ever been ostracized. Everyone has been ostracized.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you're a woman and you go into like a big corporate atmosphere that's all men, and your chances of, you know, moving up the ranks or getting a particular job are less because you're a woman. Or maybe you're getting ostracized within the workplace because you're a woman. Think about that. Like, make it personal. That's what it feels like to people of color on a daily basis. I was talking to a family member. She's black. She said, you actually take those feelings. You do know what it feels like to be ostracized. Take those feelings, make it personal, and relate to the feelings that people of color are going through with things such as police brutality.
Yeah.
Does that make sense, Michael?
Yeah, that makes absolute sense. Because I think only when it becomes personal can you empathize, can you put yourself in that same position. So, yeah, that's right on.
Back to standing up for what is right. A lot of us don't stand up for what we know is right intuitively inside because we fear being ostracized. So, you know, I'm not saying I know what it's like to be black, but those feelings are definitely relatable to be ostracized for being black on a daily basis.
You know, why do you think it's, why do you think, and you talked about how All Lives Matter blankets the Black Lives Matter movement. Why do you think beyond fear and maybe, well, let me just say beyond fear, why do you think it is so difficult for white people to have this conversation?
Well, there's different reasons. Some people don't want to change. Some people are going to choose to walk around with hate and prejudice. And, you know, that. Some people aren't listening enough. And I know that sounds really simple. There's a stubbornness and pride. And I think with, so if I come to a friend and I say, well, all lives matter. And I just say it like, oh, well, all lives matter, don't they? And I respond to them, well, when you say that, this is what you're doing. You're blanketing Black Lives Matter. And they take what I'm saying to them personally. I think some people aren't stopping to think that they're taking it personally and making it about them. Rather than choosing to listen and learn. It's like being humbled. I don't know if these are the right words, but a lot of people just immediately get on the defense about that and then walk away from a conversation, or a conversation that could have been full of learning and constructive and, you know, maybe cause someone to see things more clearly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jamie, you had made a point about pretty much somebody coming to say, well, all lives matter, don't they? And that kind of goes without saying. And the fact that we have Black Lives Matter being counteracted by the All Lives Matter movement is an issue. I think people who are white see All Lives Matter as a I guess as a way for them to make it the bigger picture, it about all of us instead of just black people. And how do you go about having that conversation not end right there when you say, well, all lives matter? Well, yeah, but so do black lives. As a white woman, how does that conversation play out?
Well, I start with, I will typically start with a response of, when you say this, when you say all lives matter, you know, we go about it calmly. You're actually blanketing the purpose of a movement like Black Lives Matter. And I explain what Black Lives Matter is.
Do you find that it gets that being able to explain it brings more clarity? Do they understand from your point of view about what Black Lives Matter is about? Because I hear a lot of different things, you know, is from other white individuals who see Black Lives Matter as some type of anti-white hate group, you know, and that's totally not the case. So how do you paint that picture for others who are a little bit lost about what Black Lives Matter is for and trying to do?
Well, I start with saying what basically you just said. It's an equality movement. It's not about separating yourself from other races. Black Lives Matter is not about separating themselves from whites. Anyone can join in a march and be an ally and support. It's about creating equality. It's about Black Lives Matter. It's about ending all brutality. And it's about, you know, while at the same time saying, hey, the reason we have this movement, look at us, but we're being treated differently. We're Black and being treated differently by the police. So there's that. But we're not here to separate ourselves from you or hate you. We're here because we want to be equal. And we're not. And we want to be treated the same as you when we get pulled over. Come join us. Black Lives Matter movement saying, come join us. Mm-hmm. Anybody can come join us. So it's not a hate group. It's not an anti-white group. And I think that we only have so much control with what people will decide to do. Like if I sit down and have a conversation with them, I know when I leave that conversation, say everything I just said to you, there's only so much control I have over it after that. What they decide to do, go and do with that is up to them. They may want to be stubborn and not hear it and decide, oh, that's BS, and, you know, go on. Or it'll plant a seed, and they'll start thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know, does that help you answer your question?
Yeah. I think that answers the question perfectly. I think, you know, the challenge is finding space within this social movement for everyone. And I wonder, would you say, because I've heard this from some of my white friends, is that they feel as though they're not wanted within the movement itself. And I think some of that has to do with when you talked about you know, pride and not the humility, and also maybe with, you know, feeling, taking it personally. So do you sense that our white brothers and sisters feel like they would not be accepted into the movement?
Not all of them, some of them, because there's plenty of white people in the movement and knowing they can be a part of. But for the ones you're referring to, there are some people that think that, I believe. And along that, with that, taking things personally.
Yeah.
It's not about, I have to step away from that. It's not about the white population's feelings, like getting hurt. That's not what that is. Like, it's about this movement for a population of people are being treated unjustly.
Yeah.
Our Black family and friends are telling us we are being treated differently. Help us. Hear us out. I've been telling this out for a long time.
Yeah.
You guys have been telling us that for a long time. I could go, like, really, really deep, but I know for me, like, I have to understand that this is not personal to me, but in some ways it is. But when it comes to being teachable, if I sit down and have a conversation with you and you tell me, hey, this is what I'm experiencing in a black man, as a black man in society today, I have to choose to listen and understand that my experience hasn't been the same with yours and that I'm not black, and then listen to you and hear you out and be willing to choose after that, like how my attitude is going to be. I have to set aside pride. I have to set aside stubbornness. I have to set aside all those things and hear you.
That, I mean, and that's the challenge. You know, when I find myself in conversations where people want me to validate them in order to validate myself, I mean, you know, and I have to acknowledge, I have to go into all these caveats like you're not responsible and you didn't have slaves and you, I know you have black friends. I mean, I have to go into all of that before I can speak my truth. And that's what, and that in itself is what people don't understand is devaluing. Just today on my Facebook, I posted something. If you go, Jamie, when you get a second, go look at the dialogue. But I posted an article that was written by somebody else about white privilege. And the person came on and talked about how her dad came here as an immigrant and how he did all these wonderful things. And everybody respected him. And so what's the point of this article? And I simply said, you know, your father did not come here as a slave. And I said, that's the point. And her response to me was that I disrespected her father. And I said, how did I disrespect your father? Because I did not acknowledge all that he had done. So in other words, now I have to acknowledge her father in order for me to even have her hear my truth. I mean, that to me in itself further devalues the lives of black people. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you hit a extremely crucial point. It might have been back to articles. Someone posted an article on the page. Barbara, we added her to the group. It says white privilege ? And this woman gave all the examples. This woman who went to Harvard and had to answer to all this, as a black woman, answer to all this sensitivity and defense and, like, statements like, deal with it. Like, this whole article is all these examples she's dealt with of white privilege. While at the same time, you know, her constantly having to answer to that was causing her to feel devalued. Okay, people coming up to her, and I'm kind of getting off topic of what you're saying a little bit, Michael, but in this whole article, the bigger picture was her being devalued as this black woman who went to Harvard.
Yeah.
She was dealing with these statements like, someone would ask, where are you going to school? And she would say, Harvard. And they said, oh, the one in Massachusetts?
Yeah.
And she's like, no, in Missouri. Yeah, you know, yes, the one in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Along with that, it connects to what you're saying about feeling devalued as a black person while you're also having to watch out and take care of the feelings of maybe your white friend.
Absolutely.
Who might be getting your feelings hurt.
Absolutely.
I think I finally got there.
Absolutely.
I'm still learning too. That's another thing. Mm-hmm. If you're just learning, don't be afraid to learn.
Oh,
like,
I like that. That kind of allows a person to take some ownership, take some responsibility to just learn something new. I mean, if it could be that simple as to just look at it as a learning opportunity.
Like, a lot of us know in our hearts what's right and wrong. Racism is wrong. But what are you going to do to stand up for justice? Action has to be taken. Not enough to post love is the answer memes. People are dying. You got to do something. You know, there's physical things, write your elected officials, which I will be doing soon. learning how to do that. I'm part of a group that is posting formats and ways and explaining ways to write your elected officials, be a part of groups like that. I talked to you 2 weeks ago, Michael, about the Surge Group showing up for racial justice.
Yes.
It's a group of an organization of white allies that have come together and created groups and affiliates all over the nation. Anybody can join. It's predominantly white people, but you can join if you're a person of color as well. And I was talking to my little mentor over here the other day about what they did in Cleveland, and they sit down and they have sensitivity training. It's kind of like the conversation we're having now. Like, they sit down, and the way they spend their time in their Surge group is through sensitivity training, like creating awareness of, you know, how people of color are being treated differently, what's happening, pointing out, you know, examples of white privilege, and so on and so on and so on. It's like,
Jamie, do awareness. You find that people don't know that they have a privilege, or that blacks are being disproportionately disrespected or devalued?
This is actually going to answer the question you guys asked me earlier. I came back full circle. I eventually come around with my thoughts. I think that is a bigger part of the problem now. Parts of the population not knowing, parts of the white population not knowing that they do have white privilege. Saying things like, well, racism is kind of not the best statement, not the best example, but you mean these things still happen? You mean racism's still happening? I don't see it. I don't get treated that way. Like, that's a big part of the problem, not understanding.
Oh, man, it must be nice.
If I have white privilege. It may not be this blatant racism. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, my friends are black, so I'm not racist. So I'm not racist. But not understanding that you have white privilege, which means you're treated differently because you're white, you get more advantages typically. Not understanding that, not having those conversations, is a big part of the issue.
Yeah.
And that's when you start seeing these defensive conversations and, you know, some white people taking things personally. That's a big one right now. Like, the discussion of white privilege, we have white people, you know, taking it personally and thinking they're, you know, being attacked. And,
and you know, Jamie, what I will say to that is, you know, a few years ago, when I started reading, Dr. Peggy McIntosh and her writings on white privilege and listening to Tim Wise and others. I mean, what's so funny is it's white people writing about and talking about white privilege. But for me to talk about it, I don't know if they get mad at Peggy or they get mad at Tim. I don't know if they get mad, but they get mad at me. And I'm not even writing about it, you know. I'm just articulating what's been written about it. And so it's based in race, you see, because I can't even talk about the obvious, although white scholars are writing and talking about it. Does that make sense?
It does. And you're absolutely right. Oh, yes. It most definitely does happen.
Well, I tell you, yeah. Go ahead. No, go ahead, James.
I was just going to let you know that I'm here to listen to you, Michael. Yeah. And I'm here to listen to you, DT.
Oh, great. Well,
there's a bunch of us that are.
Well, we appreciate you. And like I told you before when you came on, you and the others are flowing in a tradition that has always been. We have always been linked arm in arm with our white brothers and sisters, trying to work out this thing called American equality and opportunity for all. And I just appreciate, you know, your courage, your willingness to stand up for what's right, and your willingness to stand up for those you love. I mean, that is, I think, the highest compliment that one can receive.
And I think some of the things you brought out on the show today are very practical and meaningful. And hopefully, I mean, our mission has been to, you know, to further the conversation and educate and engage people in ways that that would make our society better. So, Jamie, thank you so much again for coming on and sharing your thoughts. And is anything coming up on the radar for work going on in Phoenix?
Yeah, we've actually been meeting our organization. Actually, when I get off this call, my organization, the Surge organization, is meeting out here. The Black Lives Matter movement here is actually working with the police, and they are, I don't know if you heard about it, it was on the news. Mm-mm. They're sitting down, Reginald Walton is, had a meeting, the Black Lives Matter Phoenix movement, at a church the other day, and they sat down with the police and asked them some really difficult questions and came up with some solutions about, you know, de-escalation training and, you know, community meetings and stuff like that. So here, they are working with the police. They're asking, we're actually going to have a surge protest at City Hall the other day, but we stepped down from that because the Black Lives Matter movement is asking that there aren't protests right now. Mm. They're trying to talk and work with the police.
Great.
Here in Phoenix.
Great, great.
So that's what's going on here.
Sweet.
And I don't know, me and my friends are just continuing, and organizations are just continuing to meet up and talk because it's not over. We can't be violent and we take action for a little bit and then rest. We got to continue to keep taking action.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, thank you for coming on the show today. And we look forward to continue our dialogue, especially with you, on Facebook and other platforms. So, Jamie, thank you so much. And we look forward to speaking with you soon.
Okay, thank you, Michael. Thanks, BT.
No problem, Jamie. Thank you.
Thank you for downloading this episode. Here on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play Music, or whatever podcasting library you're listening to this show on, please rate and review. Those reviews and ratings help us tremendously. We thank you.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. Man, that was a great, great talk. I'm not going to even say interview because she took the mic and just... And just really shared her heart, man.
Yeah, for sure. And, you can definitely hear her passion and hear her the genuineness and the message that she given. But like she said, man, what are you going to do to stand up for social justice? We must take action.
Absolutely.
She says, speak up. Yeah. Speak out.
Yeah.
Don't be silent. Don't be dormant as we continue to face these challenges every single day.
Yeah. And listen and learn. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's deep, you know. Put yourself in a position where you can learn, and you can only do that if you are humble. And I'm gonna tell you what you can get, folks. You need to reach out to Jamie and let her know a great job she did on this show. But just connect with her, and you can ask her questions, and you can hit her at on Instagram at Jamie, Jamiel Pettis, Pettis. You can also get her on Twitter at Jamie, Jamiel Pettis, Pettis Art. So that's at Jamie with an L, Pettisart. She's also the owner of 32 Fitness. You can like her on Facebook. And also, you can check out our website at 32fitness.com. But we just appreciate having Jamie on the show. Folks, remember, we're going to be at the fundraiser Sunday, July 31st, Galleria Country Club, 5, 5300 Galleria Boulevard in Oklahoma City. You can get your tickets at TAF5.org. Again, TAF5.org. Wonderful show, brother. Wonderful.
I'm looking forward to our event there, man. We're gonna have some giveaways.
We will have some giveaways.
Are we gonna have some giveaways?
Well, you already put it out there.
Out too quick, huh?
Put that out there. I think Richard's working on some stuff. I like that shirt he got on, black in studio. Yeah, he might want to get that away. You know,
what do you say?
Already a pre-worn one too. Yeah, you can get that one.
So show up, size Richard up. If it's just size, he'll take it right off and give it to
give
you.
It right off, because he likes showing off his six pack anyway.
He'll give you the shirt right off his back.
Out, like, look at me now. Yeah, he likes showing off anyway. But folks, we appreciate you hanging out with One Mic, One Voice. Been 1 year, we love it, and as we always say, history will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time, and what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided people? Yes, history will speak of us.
We can make a difference if we try. We can be the change that's in our lives. All we gotta do is work together. We gotta raise our children better. We gotta stop the hate, and spread the love.
One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
One mic,
one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
One
mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
Your choice.
Today's broadcast is being brought to you by Blacken Studios. To learn more about Blacken Studios, please visit them at blackenstudios.com or visit them on their Facebook page, Blacken Studios. Today's broadcast is also being brought to you by Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. To learn more about Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, please visit their website at perrypublishingandbroadcasting.net. The opinions of the One Mic, One Voice show do not reflect the views of Blacken Studios or Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show.